schools in COVID, reopen and send kids back, or wait till teachers are vaccinated? Tonight, there is movement. I'm Shepard Smith. This is the news on CNBC.
You still have to have the necessary safety protocols in place, the mask wearing, the cleaning, the hand washing.
Getting kids back in the classroom, a priority for the president. Tonight, the politics, the science, and finding the balance between the safety of our teachers and the mental health of our students. The race to vaccinate ahead of the variants, the setbacks, the successes, and the overall rollout rehaul.
Our view is that this bill itself is bipartisan.
Signs of compromise. Both sides focus in on COVID relief checks, targeting how much money Americans can expect to get. Plus, the hunt for affordable housing made tougher during the pandemic. How the ailing hotel industry may hold a ready-made solution.
Live from CNBC, the facts, the truth, the news with Shepard Smith.
Good evening. A new front opened up today in the year-long fight to reopen America's schools. The CDC director said point blank that vaccinating teachers is not a prerequisite for opening.
There is increasing data to suggest that schools can safely reopen, and that safe reopening does not suggest that teachers need to be vaccinated in order to reopen safely.
Across the country, several major school districts have been at odds with teachers' unions, who insist they will not send their educators into unsafe environments. In Chicago and Los Angeles and other places, unions are demanding all teachers be vaccinated before they return to the classroom. Those districts account for nearly a million students. President Biden has promised he will reopen most schools in his first 100 days in office. He has vowed to follow the science, which the CDC now says classrooms can function safely with the right precautions. During his confirmation hearing today, the president's nominee for Education Secretary, Miguel Cardona, pledged to do everything in his power to safely reopen schools, but he did not give many specifics about how he plans to do it. The well-being of America's children hangs in the balance. So does the future of the economy, which officials say can't get back to normal until parents have their kids back in school. CNBC's Kate Rogers tracking the fight.
From coast to coast, the battle over when and how to reopen schools is heating up as vaccines slowly roll out and COVID cases continue to surge. In San Francisco, the city sued its own school board to force it to develop a reopening plan. In Chicago, one educator is teaching remotely from outside of his classroom to limit his family's exposure. And in Wake County, North Carolina, the school district calling for substitute teachers ahead of its planned reopening. The American Federation of Teachers says widespread testing is key to reopening safely, as has been the case in places like Colorado. This, as a new CDC report says, it's safe to reopen schools after months of COVID closures, with or without vaccinating teachers. But teachers and teachers' unions are pushing back, saying the vaccine isn't the only piece of the puzzle. State and local education systems need resources to open safely.
Just because you get the vaccine is not going to turn on a light switch and say, okay, well, we can go back in school full set. You still have to have the necessary safety protocols in place, the mask wearing, the cleaning, the hand washing, the ventilation, the distancing. All those have to be in place.
The White House says reopening is a top priority for the administration, but the decision to reopen or close schools is made at the local level. Senator Mitch McConnell today blaming the impasse on teachers' unions.
The obstacle is a lack of willpower, not among students, not among parents, just among the rich, powerful unions that donate huge sums to Democrats and get a stranglehold over education.
Vaccinating teachers is a major sticking point in the fight over reopening in places like Chicago and California. In fact, California's governor said today that schools can safely reopen in the state with mitigation efforts even before teachers are fully vaccinated. But some unions in the state have said those vaccines for teachers must be prioritized before kids can return to the classroom. Shep?
Kate Rogers, thank you. An urgent call tonight to reopen schools right now. The California chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics is now warning the harms of keeping kids out of the classrooms outweigh the risks of safely managed classrooms. Mental health is a key factor here. In Clark County, Nevada, which includes Las Vegas, a spike in suicides among students has led the school district to reopen some of the classrooms. The New York Times reports 18 students killed themselves during the first 9 months that schools were closed, the youngest just 9. Here's CNBC's Contessa Brewer.
The pandemic and remote learning in the Denver suburbs has taken its toll on the Wessel girls.
I started getting like trapped in my own brain. It's just like a cycle of doing nothing but screen time in school all day.
Madeline's a high school senior. Andy's a sophomore.
When I don't have the social connection with the people that I choose to be around, that really like kind of hit me low. And like, I think, yes, it has affected my mental health.
As a parent, it's horrible. And I only get upset because it's my kids. Give me a second.
Their mom, a nurse practitioner, finds herself tackling tough conversations.
One of my questions always is, do you feel like harming yourself? And that's partly because it's my job to ask that at work. And sometimes the answer has been, I don't know. Sometimes it's, you know, no, mom, I'm fine. Leave me alone.
Over 7 months last year, the CDC reports 25% to 30% more emergency room trips for children and teenagers for mental health reasons than in 2019.
A big part of support and treatment for those individuals is connecting with others. The importance of reintroducing as much as possible in-person schooling can't be overemphasized.
For the Wessels, a recent return to in-person learning and team sports has made a huge difference.
Going back to school, it gives you back the structure.
Until schools fully reopen, the experts suggest parents work to find opportunities for their kids to socialize safely. They say this is crucial for kids' mental health, Shep.
Contessa Brewer, thank you. The Biden administration is set to open its first mass vaccination sites this month. They're planned for California, the state serving as the location of a pilot program for the president's plan to open 100 sites across the nation. California's governor announced today that 2 locations will be run by FEMA and the governor's office. Officials say those sites can vaccinate 5,000 people a day. It'll be a big boost to the state's sluggish rollout. According to the CDC, only 9% of those in California have been vaccinated, putting that state in 35th place nationwide. Meantime, in New York, vaccination sites are up and running again after that snowstorm forced cancellations. Boston's Fenway Park also back in play. The Massachusetts governor, Charlie Baker, says the stadium will eventually administer 8,000 shots per week. And Missouri, which ranks in the bottom 3 for vaccinations, now changing its strategy to speed things up. In St. Louis, here's NBC's Dasha Burns.
Shep, Missouri will now be allocating the majority of its doses to what they call high-throughput hospitals, places that can vaccinate 5,000 people a week. You're now going to see about 53% of the state's doses go to hospitals like this one behind me here, SSM Health St. Louis University Hospital. And speaking to health officials here, they tell me that the real change that they're going to see here is more consistency. So far, they haven't known week to week how many doses they're going to get. This hospital system hasn't seen a shipment in 2.5 weeks. So this new system is going to change that. The one thing it's not going to change, though, is supply, which is still the number one bottleneck in this whole thing. I want you to hear from the head of the St. Louis Metropolitan Pandemic Task Force on the issue. Listen.
I'm hoping that the Biden administration can find ways to increase production, because that is really the name of the game right now. Anything that we can do to increase the amount of vaccine is really what's going to drive their herd immunity, and it's also what's going to get us back to normal.
Shep, 2.5 million Missouri residents are eligible to receive the vaccine, but the state is only getting 75,000 doses a week, nowhere near enough to vaccinate all of those that are eligible anytime soon. I also spoke to the mayor of the city of St. Louis, who says she welcomes the news that hospitals with the capacity to do large-scale vaccinations will now be getting those doses, but she is concerned that health departments like hers are getting a smaller piece of an already very small pie. Shep.
NBC's Dasha Burns, thanks. You know, we all fantasize about a time when we won't have to wear the masks anymore. It's not now. But some at a supermarket in Florida appear to have decided that the time is now. Look at this. This was the scene at Oaks Farm Seed and to Table Market in Naples today. NBC's Sam Brock took this video, which went viral. It looks like it was taken pre-pandemic, right? Most customers and employees not wearing masks at all. The store's policy includes mask exemption guidelines. The sign says if you have a medical condition that you don't have to wear a mask, and nobody inside will ask about medical conditions, so masks are not enforced. The owner told Sam Brock this when questioned about the policy.
Is your position then about medical exemptions, or is it about the fact that you don't think masks work and that the virus is not a real thing?
I know that the masks don't work, and I know that the virus has not killed 400,000 people in this country. That's total hogwash.
Florida does not have a mask mandate, but masks do work. The science is crystal clear. In July, the CDC director said the United States could get COVID under control in 4 to 8 weeks if we would only all wear masks. House Republicans are facing a major reckoning and a civil war within their ranks as they decide the fates of two GOP congresswomen. The House is set to vote tomorrow on whether to strip the Republican Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene of her committee assignments because of her past support for wild, reckless, and dangerous conspiracy theories, including QAnon. Today, Democrats on the House Rules Committee gave the go-ahead for the vote and said they must act because Republicans are not taking any action.
Congresswoman Greene has also promoted truly appalling things, from implying that 9/11 is a hoax, saying school shootings were false flag operations, and spreading anti-Semitic conspiracy theories, including one about a Jewish space laser being the cause of wildfires in California. If this isn't the bottom line, I don't know where the hell the bottom line is.
The House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy released a statement today condemning Green's past comments, but he says the resolution to remove her from committees is a distraction for the Congress. Strikingly, the House GOP is also deciding whether they'll remove the Congresswoman Liz Cheney from her leadership role as the number three Republican in all the House after she voted to impeach the former president. A source tells NBC News that Representative Cheney refused to apologize for impeaching the former president during a reportedly raucous closed-door GOP meeting that's ongoing now. NBC's Sahil Kapoor now. Sahil, Republicans are going to have to be on the record tomorrow with this vote.
They are, Shep, and it looks like they are eyeing a procedural reason to vote against stripping Marjorie Taylor Greene from her committee assignments, essentially arguing that longstanding principle in the House is for the minority party to be able to decide who takes those seats, not the majority party. They are right that it is highly unusual for a majority party to strip a member of the minority from a committee seat like this, but Marjorie Taylor Greene's views are also highly, highly unusual. In addition to the ones you mentioned, she has also elevated social media posts calling for violence against Democrats. So they believe this is an extraordinary situation that has to be dealt with for the good of the House of Representatives.
But on Congresswoman Cheney, is she in a position now to beat back this backlash?
She certainly seems to think so, Shep. She, as you mentioned, refused to apologize for her vote to impeach former President Trump, even though she was wildly in the minority on this issue. Just 10 House Republicans out of about 200 voted the way she did, but she isn't backing down. And I think she also is ironically helped by the fact that if Republicans do nothing about Marjorie Taylor Greene and remove her from leadership, it sends an extraordinary signal to any kind of future Republicans who may be running for office, who may subscribe to the old school kind of Republicanism and believe that there's no real place for them in the party if someone like Marjorie Taylor Greene's views are accepted or at least not punished, and someone like Liz Cheney is removed.
Sahil Kapoor, thanks very much. You know, party turmoil is not just on the right these days. A group that worked to elect Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is launching a new effort against Senators Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema. That group is called No Excuses, and it wants to replace what it calls the conservative Democrats who stand in the way of progress. It accuses Senators Manchin and Sinema of helping Republicans negotiate down from real solutions in the name of bipartisanship. Both senators oppose getting rid of the filibuster, which would end the 60-vote threshold for most bills. The group's first step was to run ads warning both senators. Now it's looking for the right people to replace them. They say career politicians need not apply. The FBI now identifying the man who ambushed agents in South Florida and killed two of them. Reports are he saw them coming. So does the Bureau need to reevaluate its rules of engagement? Plus, inside Wuhan's Institute of Virology.
We're seeing new information, and it's good.
Clearing the air? On the ground in Wuhan, investigators go inside the lab wrongly tied to the origins of COVID-19. Chicago facing a record-breaking surge in carjackings. And the troubling trend, many suspects are not old enough to drive. And a tale of two Robin Hoods. Fans of the legendary thief find themselves caught up in the GameStop story.
The facts, the truth, the news with Shepard Smith, back in 60 seconds.
The FBI says it's identified the gunman who killed two FBI agents in South Florida yesterday morning. His name is David Lee Huber, 55 years old. The FBI says he was being investigated for child pornography. The Miami Herald reports Huber worked on computers and ran a computer consulting business. His only known run-ins with the law, some traffic tickets and an eviction. The FBI says the two agents were killed while executing a search warrant at Huber's apartment yesterday in the town of Sunrise, both veterans of the Bureau. According to the Herald, Huber watched the agents approach his apartment on a doorbell camera, and he opened fire through that door with an assault-style rifle. It was the deadliest day for the FBI since the terror attacks of 9/11. Frank Figliuzzi now, former assistant director for counterterrorism, or I should say counterintelligence at the FBI, and NBC News national security contributor. Frank, is this how agents usually serve a search warrant, and will the FBI now consider changing tactics?
Typically, a search warrant obviously has to be served where the items are that you're searching for. So, yes. However, to answer your second question, the FBI is very good at pivoting and adapting from mistakes and from new threats. And the new threat here, as you pointed out, Shep, is the proliferation of these doorbell cameras and other security cameras that are almost as prolific as weapons inside people's homes. So don't be surprised if you see a new tactical approach, which is, if we want the element of surprise, it's not walking down the driveway toward the house anymore. It's taking someone down outside the house and then proceeding to the house more safely so you can execute your search.
Makes perfect sense in this new world. You know, Frank, until yesterday's outburst of violence, this guy lived what so far appears to be a largely nonviolent life. Can you think of any way the FBI could have been warned that this ambush was a possibility?
You can never totally eliminate the threat faced by law enforcement. That's a reminder for all of us. But you do your homework, and I believe the FBI is excellent at doing their intel gathering before hitting a house with a warrant or an arrest warrant. You look at concealed carry permits, gun registration. You always look around for vicious dogs. Are there children present that could be harmed if we enter the home? All of that gets done, but you can never eliminate the surprise. And the extra threat here was the child pornography charge. That's the nature of this search. Those people are extremely threatened. They have nothing left to lose when they're discovered to be a child pornographer. Why? Because their reputation comes crashing down on them. They often commit suicide. In this case, they killed FBI agents.
Yeah, you know, these two agents, they'd been doing this admirable work for so long. And you think about how much things have changed. There's doorbell cameras. There's security cameras around houses. There are drones. So much that so many can get their hands on for so little. How much more dangerous does this technology, which can be used by law enforcement for so much good, cause for them out in the field?
Once again, law enforcement's behind the technology. It's out in front of us, of course, and that happens throughout history. But the catch-up is going to be fast, and there may be methods, Shep, where law enforcement can learn who has these devices and do extra surveillance and make certain that they don't see any signs of this or a signal coming from the House that indicates that. The huge tragic irony here, Shep, is these two agents died protecting children, and they left children of their own when they were slain.
Yeah, just horrifying. Frank Figluzzi, thanks so much. General Motors now pausing production at four of its plants because of a shortage of semiconductors. Those, of course, are the small computer chips on which cars really rely these days. GM's the latest automaker to be impacted. Ford, Toyota, Subaru, Nissan, Volkswagen, they're all facing production issues just like this one. It's a global problem now. Senators from states that rely on the auto industry are now pressing the White House to address this shortage, warning in a letter that not doing so really threatens the country's economic recovery. CBC's Phil LeBeau live in Chicago. Phil, is this shortage impacting jobs? What's the damage to the auto industry?
Well, it is impacting jobs, Shep. In fact, Ford is in the midst of doing sort of rolling furloughs depending on what supply of chips that they have. The Louisville plant, for example, they've shut down production. They're going to be having production cuts or shift cuts at the plant here in Chicago. And this is really sort of a week-to-week thing, not only with Ford, but really for all the automakers. And you talk about General Motors. Here's what they're looking at and what they announced today. They had been able to avoid any drastic cuts until today when they've said, look, we are going to have to cut back production at four plants, three here in North America. It'll start next week. The lower volume, lower profit models are the ones that they're going to pull back production on. Why? You want to make, if you're an automaker, the higher profit, higher demand vehicles. We're talking about the full-size pickup truck. So for now, that production will not be impacted. But make no mistake, Shep, this is a global problem. And you're looking at Q1 production for all the automakers, maybe down 3, 4, 5% worldwide.
Well, that's a big number. Phil, about an hour, maybe an hour and a half ago, my phone bleeped that CNBC alert bleep. And I looked down at it, and it said the Apple car may be real and that there's something coming together. Tell me, I've been dying for this.
Well, this is a story that me and my producer, Megan Reeder, have been working on for some time. Basically, sources have told us that Apple has been in discussions with Hyundai Kia about building the Apple car at the Kia plant in West Point, Georgia. That's about an hour and a half southwest of Atlanta. There's available capacity there. And the thing to keep in mind here, Shep, is that this would be an Apple car with Apple hardware and software. This would not be Apple software going into a Kia model. This would be a true Apple car. They're scheduling production right now for 2024, but no agreement has been finalized. Both companies declined to comment. And look, this could get pushed back, and it may not happen in 2024, but they're moving in that direction.
It's an exciting thing to think about. Phil LeBeau, our man on cars and automotive, thanks so much. COVID-19, it's dominated our lives for, what, almost a year now. Researching its origins in China tonight. What the team on the ground hopes to find in Wuhan. And the president's COVID relief package now facing strong resistance from within his own party over who will get checks and how much they will be as we approach the bottom of the hour and the top of the news. Today, scientists visited the Wuhan, China lab at the center of speculation about the origin of the coronavirus. Members of the World Health Organization spent about 3 hours inside the high security Institute of Virology. The research center came under heavy scrutiny last year after the former president claimed that the virus might have leaked from a lab there. Over the past week, the WHO team visited several sites, including hospitals and the city's traditional markets. But questions remain on where the outbreak began. Here's CNBC's China correspondent, Eunice Yoon.
Few places are as shrouded in haze as Wuhan's Institute of Virology. Experts from the World Health Organization in Wuhan to investigate how the virus jumped to humans negotiated a stop there with the Chinese.
We're looking forward to meeting with all the key people here.
The Wuhan Institute boasts China's only P4 lab, with biosafety protocols meant to contain the most dangerous pathogens, but one which the Trump administration claimed, without proof, allowed the virus to escape or had deliberately leaked. On state TV, the Institute's lead virologist on bats, Shizheng Li, known as China's Batwoman, repeatedly dismisses those allegations. Her director told NBC News last summer the Institute didn't even have the virus strain until the first patient samples arrived on December 30, 2019. The WHO team visited the P4 lab and Dr. Shi, with one expert tweeting the discussion was frank. Earlier, he told Sky News the team would approach all leads with an open mind.
Any hypothesis will follow the data, will follow the evidence where it leads us.
Yet some speculate the team is limited, especially as Beijing promulgates its own theories the virus originated elsewhere, including America. We hope the U.S. will have an active, scientific, and cooperative attitude in sourcing the virus origins, just like China, says his foreign ministry spokesperson, and invite the WHO experts for an investigation in the U.S.
And the team is in Wuhan for another week, and the scientists say that at the end of this mission, they intend to produce a report to run through the most likely scenarios and give their recommendations of what needs to be done over the coming weeks and months to prevent another pandemic. Shep?
CNBC's Eunice Yoon, live in Beijing. GameStop's wild surge is now the subject of a federal investigation, and that's what's topping CNBC on the money. The Securities and Exchange Commission combing through social media posts for signs of fraud. That's according to Bloomberg, which reports the SEC is trying to figure out whether professional investors were involved, either by taking advantage of the Reddit-fueled surge or by hyping it. Gun sales climbed 75% last month compared to January 2020. The National Shooting Sports Federation is a firearms trade group. It reports people bought more than 2 million firearms last month. FBI officials say they conducted a number of background checks during the same period, 4.3 million. And Tom Brady breaking records on and off the field. Fanatics, the NFL's official e-commerce partner, announced his Tampa Bay Bucks merchandise is selling like hotcakes. For the two-week period leading up to the Super Bowl, Tom Brady is now the best-selling NFL player ever. On Wall Street, the Dow up 36, the S&P up 4, the NASDAQ down 2. I'm Shepard Smith on CNBC. It's the bottom of the hour, time for the top of the news. President Biden is not budging on his promise to send out $1,400 coronavirus relief checks. In meetings with Democratic lawmakers this morning, the president said he will not start his administration by breaking a promise to Americans. But before he took office, President Biden also made a promise of bipartisanship and unity. That's looking less likely as Republicans counter his $1.9 trillion relief package with a proposal less than a third that size.
We want to do it bipartisan, but we must be strong. We cannot dawdle, we cannot delay, we cannot dilute.
He is willing to compromise on who is eligible for the checks. That, of course, was a sticking point for lawmakers on both sides of the aisle, asking for the checks to be more targeted. CNBC's Ilan Moy live in Washington. Ilan, any movement on compromise to report tonight?
Well, Shep, I've just learned from a source that Democrats are discussing lowering the threshold to qualify for the full check by as much as $50,000. And this comes as a nonpartisan Penn Wharton budget model found that a lot of the benefits from those checks and other direct relief in the current plan would actually go to high-income households.
But when you're talking about the plan in its totality, and it's $1.9 trillion, you have a large amount of money going towards people who are in the top quintiles. Everyone along the bottom to the top is getting some money.
Now, more than a third of families at almost the very top of the ladder would get thousands of dollars in direct relief. The average is $4,265, though that's just a fraction of their income after taxes. Those at the bottom would get a major boost as well. All of the lowest income households would qualify for benefits. Their average is $2,505, and that's more than a 50% increase in after-tax income. Now, this report also found that most of the money from those checks would actually go towards savings rather than spending, but the White House is pushing back on those numbers.
I've talked to our economic team about it and frankly feel it's way out of step with the majority of studies on this plan. And when one in seven American families don't have enough food to eat, it's clear that there is a great deal of need for assistance.
And the stimulus checks are also really popular. A new poll out today found that almost 80% of Americans say they support them. And Shep, overall, 68% of Americans say that they're in favor of Biden's $1.9 trillion plan.
Ilan, thank you. Finding an affordable apartment was hard enough before the pandemic, right? But now things are even worse. Some are calling it a crisis. As land, labor, and material costs climb higher, builders say putting up new affordable housing has become, well, not so affordable. And that's why some apartment developers are looking at hotels. They're already built, not many people are using them these days, and all they really need is a little bit of work. CNBC's Diana Olick on a match made in real estate heaven.
This small apartment building near Minneapolis kind of looks like a hotel. That's because it recently was one. But just before the pandemic struck, developer David Peters bought it and converted it to Town Square Place, mostly affordable apartment units with some remaining hotel rooms.
What we saw when the pandemic struck is we saw even more demand, I think, for the micro apartment style affordable housing.
The shortage is now critical. Affordable so-called Class C apartments are 96% occupied nationally, 99% occupied in the Midwest, according to RealPage. Pricier Class A apartments are more plentiful. Meanwhile, hotels are in deep trouble. The share of hotels currently behind on their mortgages rose to just over 18% in December, according to Fitch Ratings. That's even worse than retail real estate. But it creates an opportunity for investors like Peters to buy properties to convert at bargain basement prices. Suite hotels are the easiest to do, while regular rooms require a bit more work. But it's all far less expensive than building new.
We can offer the potential residents a better value, and we can offer the investors a good solid return.
Michelle Wickstrom was relieved to get a place at Town Square.
It's hard to find anything that's affordable or within my price range and without having to have 3 months rent or 3 months of your income.
It's kind of a win-win-win. The community wins, the residents win, the investors win.
Now, Peters has two other hotel conversions under contract, one in Minnesota and one in South Dakota, which he's getting for about half the value it was appraised at 3 years ago. He compares this with what happened during the subprime mortgage crisis a decade ago. Millions of homeowners defaulted on their mortgages, and investors came in to buy the properties and convert them into rental housing. So you're going to see a lot more of this soon, Shep.
Diana, thanks. Carjackings are on the rise. And the suspects are getting younger and harder to track during COVID. Tonight, how police are tackling this nationwide surge. Plus, he was burned over 80% of his body, had a transplant surgery of his hands and face, and now he's practicing his golf swing. Coming next, the man behind this first-of-its-kind success story. And the doctors who say while it's not a life-saving surgery, it is absolutely life-altering.
I mean, you can imagine in a face transplant, if you can't smell, if you can't speak, if you can't breathe appropriately, plus how you face the world.
The number of carjackings is skyrocketing in major cities across America. One of the worst hotspots is in Chicago. Last year, carjackings doubled there. And now cops say Chicago is on pace to have a record-smashing 1,800 carjackings this year. A lot of the suspects are young. Chicago police recently arrested a 12-year-old for stealing a car. Local coverage now. Charlie Wojciechowski reports from Chicago for NBC5 there. Charlie, do police have any idea what's behind this particular surge in carjackings?
A lot of it is COVID-related. They say people are looking for something they need to be doing at this time. A lot of the suspects in these cases are between the ages of 15 and 20 years old. They have masks. They're able to go out in anonymity. The reasons behind the carjackings are myriad. People right now are saying that one of the main reasons is people steal cars to commit other crimes. But a more disturbing reason is a lot of these crimes have to do with people going for joyrides, just taking a car out and driving it around. They'll often leave it when they run out of gas or run into another vehicle. Now, these carjackings are taking place across the city, but mostly affecting the city on the south and the west sides. There is a new task force in place to try to combat the situation, but a lot of people in the community say they're not satisfied with the way the city is handling the situation.
COVID hides the people who are looking to do this simply because they can mask so well, and it could disappear so quickly.
Now, we are hearing from a number of people saying that there need to be different things done, especially new task forces, new ways of fighting carjackings when it comes to things people need to do when they go to a gas station. A lot of people will leave their cars in the ignition or even leave the cars running at a gas station. That is one of the primary times when those cars are taken. One alderman here in Chicago says we need more helicopters, especially when it comes to these police chases that result after a carjacking has happened. He says a helicopter would help stop those chases from happening, could leave a lot of people in a much safer place than they are now.
Charlie Wojciechowski, live tonight in Chicago. A traffic stop turns into a bizarre chase, and a Silence of the Lamb house finds a new owner on a CNBC trip coast to coast. California, a marathon police chase in the L.A. area. Cops followed the driver in this Chevy Malibu for 6 hours. LAPD officials say they were responding to a call about a man with a gun when they tried to pull him over. But he took off, drove on the wrong side of the road, ran red lights, even kept driving after they hit his tires with a spike strip. The chase lasted so long, authorities say some officers and the choppers above had to pull over or land to refuel. It ended, like most chases, with the driver in cuffs. Texas. State fairs, synonymous with unhealthful food. But there's a secret here at the Texas State Fairgrounds, an urban farm right behind the Ferris wheel. Workers here grow produce year-round. They harvest in these climate-controlled hydroponic gardens, then donate the harvest to charities. Last year, during the pandemic, workers say they donated 26,000 pounds of produce. Pennsylvania. A piece of horror history is off the market. Buffalo Bill's house from The Silence of the Lambs sold. The realtor says the buyer paid $290,000. Looks almost exactly the same, minus that creepy basement. Lotion in a basket, not included. On this CNBC trip, coast to coast. Well, now to a medical achievement the world has never before seen. Surgeons in New York City say they've given a man someone else's face and hands, the first successful transplant of its kind. The patient is Joe DiMeo, 22 years old. He was badly burned in a car wreck. The doctors say DiMeo spent months in a coma, underwent 20 surgeries and multiple skin grafts, but none of them worked. The face and double hand transplant happened in August, delayed by the pandemic. The face and hand came from a single donor. Doctors at NYU Langone Medical Center say the operation took them 23 hours, and DiMeo left the hospital in November. He's been in rehab since then, learning the basics like raising his eyebrows and giving a thumbs up. He's even back in the gym.
I was just too motivated to, not stop. And I keep on going because, it's a second chance at life, so there's no excuse to not be motivated and, not to do my therapies.
Doctors say DiMeo hasn't shown any signs of rejecting his new face or his hands, but that the risk will always be there. He'll be on medication for the rest of his life to ward off infection. Well, there are new rules for two of the biggest sporting events in the world. In Tampa Bay, businesses are trying to find ways to cash in as the CDC issues a game-time decision for fans. And in Tokyo, Olympic athletes will be studying an all-new type of playbook if they want to stay and compete. But first tonight, lawmakers paid tribute today to the officer killed at the Capitol insurrection. The remains of Officer Brian Sicknick laid in honor in the U.S. Capitol Rotunda. Vice President Harris and her husband stood with their hands over their hearts to pay respects. Officer Sicknick, of course, was seriously injured by the mob on January the 6th. He died of his injuries a day later. President Biden and First Lady Jill Biden paid their respects last evening. They joined Officer Sicknick's family and colleagues to honor him. It was a somber ceremony to pay tribute to an American hero who sacrificed his life in defense of the Capitol.
Oh, beautiful for spacious skies, for amber waves of grain, for purple mountains.
Today we gather to honor Officer Brian Sicknick, a New Jersey native, a National Air Guard veteran, and a 12-year member of the Capitol Police Force.
Our promise to Brian's family is that we will never forget his sacrifice.
A hero proved in liberating strife. Lord Brian, indeed, more than self, his country loved, and mercy more than life.
The courage of these heroes brings honor, brings luster to our Constitution and our democracy.
Blessed are the peacekeepers like Brian. Let us be peacekeepers now in his memory.
Oh, beautiful for heroes proved in liberating strife, from sea to shining.
New right now, an Ohio police officer who shot and killed a black man in Columbus charged with murder. Body cam footage from December shows Andre Hill coming out of a garage holding a cell phone when Officer Adam Coy shot him. Following an investigation by the state's attorney general, a grand jury late today indicted Officer Coy on charges of murder and dereliction of duty. The International Olympic Committee announcing the first set of rules for the Summer Games in Tokyo. Because of COVID, they're a lot stricter than in past years. Face masks required at all times. No unnecessary contact. No hugs, no high fives, no handshakes. Athletes won't be allowed to cheer for their teammates from the sidelines. They have to get permission before using public transportation. And spectators can't sing or chant, clapping only. All of this to help prevent an outbreak at the world's biggest sporting event. COVID cases in the United States surged after almost every major holiday in 2020. Labor Day, Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's. Now, Super Bowl isn't technically a holiday, but Dr. Anthony Fauci is still urging people, lay low, prevent Super Bowl parties from becoming super spreaders.
As much fun as it is to get together on a big Super Bowl party, now is not the time to do that. Watch the game and enjoy it, but do it with your family or with people that are in your household.
And whether you're rooting for the Bucks or the Chiefs, NBC's Kerry Sanders has everything you know to watch the big game safely.
The sounds are the same. There is plenty of joy and sheer excitement at events like these leading up to the big game, knowing in just 4 days the Super Bowl will be kicking off. But it all looks and feels a little bit different this year.
Well, you know, it's easier for us to get around and see a lot more of the activities because there's not as many people. So that's one positive.
The challenge keeping things safe and COVID-free, Santiago Carrada, the CEO of Visit Tampa Bay, is confident it can be done.
All of our local bars, restaurants, hotels are under local mandates to limit crowds, to have social distancing, to mandate masks. All of that's in place.
The CDC has also issued Super Bowl guidelines. Its advice, stay home and watch the game and avoid social gatherings altogether.
We could have kind of mini super spreader events or little hot spots all around the country, starting with those indoor gatherings or even potentially outdoor gatherings if we don't follow the recommendations.
But businesses in a Super Bowl host city want to cash in on the big game. June Bailey, who co-owns Berry House Brewery, not far from the stadium, says they plan to let people gather, although he insists they'll do it safely.
And for all those who are now going to ignore the CDC and still have a party,
few recommendations. First of all, make sure you mask. Double masking makes more sense. And for the food that will be spread out, no double dipping. Don't share the food. Make sure it's all on separate plates, because that, of course, is what can create the Super Bowl into a super spreader event. For the news, Kerry Sanders,
Tampa. That doesn't happen. Kerry, thanks so much. The Robin Hood Society would love to help you buy stocks, but only three people work there, and they live in England. Next, how a case of mistaken identity sent thousands of American investors across the pond. A tiny group in England wound up in the middle of one of Wall Street's biggest stories, the GameStop surge. Their name? The Worldwide Robin Hood Society. Not to be confused with Robin Hood, the trading app, although many did confuse them, and that led to a very strange week for some unsuspecting Brits. CNBC's Kelly Cobiella traveled to Nottingham, home of the original Man in Tights.
Well, this merry band of volunteers for years has been trying to bring the world's attention to Robin Hood and the city behind the legend. And in just a matter of days, GameStop and an embattled trading platform did it for them. It's the city of Nottingham's claim to global fame.
It's Robin Hood!
Robin Hood in the flesh. Nice to meet you.
When not in lockdown, Tim Pollard gives tours and spreads the lore of the world's most famous thief, Robin Hood.
But how much did you know about GameStop stock?
Before all this blew up, absolutely nothing.
So it really is a modern-day Robin Hood tale.
It's absolutely a modern-day Robin Hood story, yeah.
Neither had the Worldwide Robin Hood Society, a tiny online group of Robin Hood enthusiasts who promote the legend and their historic city. Until late last week, when their Twitter feed was bombarded with tens of thousands of new followers.
Well, what kinds of tweets were you getting?
I can't mention some of them. Some of them were very frustrated. In fact, a lot of them.
Their fury meant for the Robinhood trading app at the center of the GameStop stock frenzy. The society, which sells books and Friar Tuck teddy bears, concerned, posting, "Can we just check that you know you're following the Worldwide Robinhood Society and not the Robinhood app?" And to be clear, this is the closest we've come to selling stocks. Twitter anger turned to pure joy. Can't get enough of the tweets. And I even bought a pin.
How many Twitter followers did you have before all of this started?
Well, we had just 350. And now we have over 61,000.
Robin Hood has been with us for centuries, on the big screen and in ancient texts. The name first appeared in this manuscript from the 1300s. In Sherwood Forest, just outside the city, he and his merry men would rob the rich and give to the poor. A rebel, a revolutionary, still resonating.
It's brilliant. It's lovely. It just keeps the name going. It keeps it relevant. And relevance is lifeblood, really.
A medieval hero with a modern twist, but still trying to stand up for the little guy.
The Worldwide Robin Hood Society, made up of just three volunteers, says they've gotten tweets from people around the world, lots of people in the United States as well, pledging to put this place on their places to visit when things are normal again list. Shep.
Kelly, thanks. People in South Florida, look out below. It's that time of year again. National Weather Service Miami tweeting, watch out for falling iguanas. It's going to be a cold one tonight, in the 40s. That means the cold-blooded iguanas go into shock and lose their grip, falling from the trees, very much alive, but very much immobile. If you find one, or unfortunate enough to be hit by one, leave it alone. It'll gradually warm up and meander away in search of that Florida sun. 1 minute left and a race to the finish now. Tonight, turmoil in the GOP. The House set to vote tomorrow to remove the Republican Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene from all of her committee assignments. The resolution to force Republican lawmakers to take a side and go on the record. President Biden met with top Democrats as he pushes for a $1.9 trillion COVID relief package, promising he will not budge on $1,400 direct payments for Americans. And the president set to lay out his foreign policy vision tomorrow during his first major speech at the State Department. And now, you know the news. Of this Wednesday, February 3rd, 2021, I'm Shepard Smith. Follow us on Twitter at The News on CNBC and stay tuned because Shark Tank is next. You've been listening to the CNBC podcast, The News with Shepard Smith. You can always catch us live weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, only on CNBC.